This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
From Gimlet Media, this is The Nod. I'm Eric Eddings.
And I am Brittany Luce. So when I was 6 years old, every Monday night, me and my family, we'd have a dinner of baked chicken, white rice, microwave steamed broccoli, same thing, every Monday. And then immediately after that, we would go and we would all kind of pack into the couch. We would gather around the television and my big sister would kind of shut us all up and get all of us to quiet down. And then through the television speakers. Yes, y'all know this song. My family and I, we were about to take in that masterwork of television, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Okay, so y'all know Fresh Prince, it's like a 90s sitcom, classic, you know, misbehaving teen in West Philadelphia, sent across the country to live with rich family in L.A., hijinks ensue, yada, 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 you know.
It's iconic, yes. Black television.
Yes, it's iconic American television, world television, universe, galaxy, Milky Way television. Like, it's just a family show of the highest order.
It's true. I agree.
So my absolute favorite character on Fresh Prince was Hillary, Will's oldest cousin. She was just the flyest.
Yeah. Bomb hats.
When I was a kid, like, Hillary was like a unicorn to me. She was this rich, cool black girl from L.A., and she was always impeccably dressed. And she always had a boyfriend, very popular. Yeah. You know, this is the things you value as a child, right? But she wasn't a sidekick. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of black girls on TV are. Okay, she was a total spoiled brat.
Yeah.
But as a black girl in a really white suburb, I wanted to see a character like that, you know?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that even that was like rare.
I have been stabbed in the back. Is nothing sacred? Is there like no honor?
Baby, what's the matter?
Francesca asked me to be a bridesmaid at her wedding. And? Well, what do you mean, and? She expects me to take care of the rice they throw when they leave the church. Like I'm going to learn how to cook just for her wedding.
Her character was confident, she was stylish, and she was unapologetically self-celebrating and entitled in this way that was actually kind of refreshing. And she never had to work a day in her life. Well, until she did.
I'm home. Carlton, get the camera. I want a picture of me opening my first paycheck.
Congratulations, baby.
That's wonderful.
I'm so excited. Here it goes. Don't you all feel like a part of history? What? Federal taxes? This is an outrage. Did President Bush say no new taxes?
But federal taxes aren't new.
Well, they are to me. Who is this FICA guy?
Okay, so flash forward like more than 20 years. You know, Fresh Prince is on reruns. It's in syndication like literally everywhere where there are people with TVs. But I was curious about what happened to the woman who played Hillary. Her name is Karen Parsons, and it turns out she's working on something really cool.
I climbed in this box and have hidden inside disguised as a package, just taking a ride. I'm heading north where no man's bought or sold. You see, freedom's more precious than gold.
That's a scene from her movie. Yes, the woman who played Hillary is now making movies. In 2005, she actually started an organization called Sweet Blackberry. The nonprofit creates animated shorts about little-known Black history figures. And they're kind of like kids' books come to life, like really bright, colorful, with beautiful illustrations. And they're narrated by stars like Queen Latifah and Chris Rock. The first film she made, which was narrated by actress Alfre Woodard, is about Henry Box Brown, an enslaved man who hid in a box to mail himself to the North, to freedom.
Well, I know I will nap, and I know I'll sing loud. I'll run very fast and jump high, touch a cloud. But what else, they all ask, what is it to be free? I don't think I know, but soon I will see. I was born into slavery. It's all that I know. What it means to be free, the future will show.
So y'all know Eric and I, we love talking about how kids think about Blackness. Like, for me, Hillary made me feel like I at least had the option to be cool. You know, which sounds small, but she offered me an alternative image of a girl like myself. And now Karen, with her films, she's doing something similar. She's offering a whole new generation of kids an alternative way of looking at their own history.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
So we got Karen in the studio to find out how she went from playing a notorious Valley girl to teaching kids about Black history and what happens when they ask her the hard questions. Plus, we put her up to a pretty nutty challenge. But first, we had to ask the obvious.
We were wondering, who do you think Hillary Banks's favorite Black history figure would be?
Ooh, Madam C.J. Walker.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. That is a good one.
It lines up.
Because she was the first Black female millionaire.
Millionaire, yeah.
Basically popularized the hot comb and like all
straightening
sorts of
products.
Oh, yeah. No, she had bread. All from hair.
Yeah.
All from hair.
Isn't that crazy?
All from hair.
It was funny though. On, toward the end of Fresh Prince, I had my hair both straight and curly, but mostly my hair was curly in the show. And early in the show, I think it was the first season, I thought, and I think the hairstylist on the show agreed with me that at that time Hillary would have had straight hair.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we tried to do her hair straight once, and I was on the set. We did a scene. I was a real small, like Hillary usually like few lines, and I'm out. Yeah. Quickly. And the producers of the show ran up to me afterward, and they were like, don't ever do that again. We had no idea who you were. They were like trying to figure out if it was like a date for Will. Like, did they have a girl in there for Will? They were trying to figure out what was going on. They're like, who is that? And then they realized it was Hillary. They didn't want Hillary with straight hair. Like, I don't can't recognize
you. But the brand is strong.
Yeah,
that means the brand was strong.
I was like, damn, I'm just curly head. Like, you don't know, you don't see anything else. All right.
Okay, so now that we've got our Fresh Prince gossip out of the way, we want to know, like, what made you want to start Sweet Blackberry?
I just wanted to get little-known stories of African-American achievement to kids because my mother was a librarian, and she headed the Black Resource Center where she worked and would come across really interesting stories, and she would share them with me. And this is when I was doing Fresh Prince, and she told me the story of Henry Box Brown, the enslaved man who literally mailed himself to freedom in a box across state lines. When they opened it, he was free. It was such a crazy story, and I had never heard of it, and then I told my friends, and my friends hadn't heard of it, and I thought, well, this is just nuts. This is like a man in a box. The whole thing is like such a kid's book to me. And so I kept making notes because I thought, I want to make a series of books for kids. And I'd forget about it for, go back and forth with that for a while over the years. And then when I was pregnant with my first child, I started thinking a lot about, what do they teach kids in school? And what do I have to teach her? What do I have to make sure she learns? And what's my duty as a parent? What do I have to supplement? And I started talking about Henry Box Brown a lot and the idea. And my husband has always thought it was a really good idea. And he's like, you need to stop talking about it. You just start, doing it. Just figure out a way to do it. And next thing you know, I was doing them as films instead of books because I could, at the time, self-publishing wasn't what it is today. It wasn't as easy. But I knew I could make a movie. So that's how it kind of became these films. And so now the Sweet Blackberry, it's a film series. And The whole idea is to teach children that tremendous obstacles are actually opportunities for greatness.
Mm. So we also know that you visit schools.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
I'd go to schools across the country and I screen the films for them. And we do really long, interesting Q&A sessions because kids are really funny. And they ask really good questions and they stump me all the time. Kids get you. They will ask, like with Henry Box Brown. Mm-hmm. It seems like every single time, every audience, one kid will ask the heartbreaking question, which is, did he ever see his family again?
Oh.
They always seem to, did he ever see his family again? No. Mm. You know?
Yeah. And
when I sat down after all those years of wanting to write that story and wanting to start the series, when it came time to write it, I was like, what am I thinking? This is a slavery story for kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? You know, I didn't know how far to go, how much to disclose, how much to hold back. You know, when we were doing the film itself, like there was a picture of a man holding a whip. Like, well, do we make a sound with the whip or is that too frightening? Mm-hmm. You know, there was so much kind of like negotiating, but I don't want to lie about it. I want them to know. But, you know. The older kids are funny. The older kids are like, how'd you make that movie? How'd you do, you know, they wanted to know, they always get right down to that.
Yeah,
how did you do that? And did you, what kind of camera did you use for this part? And what did you do for editing this? And
wait, so who else, I know that you guys have done Harry Box Brown.
Yeah.
Like, tell us some more about some of the other figures that you guys have talked about.
We did the story of inventor Garrett Morgan,
mm-hmm.
and it focused on him and the traffic signal. And then we did our last story, which is Janet Collins,
mm-hmm.
The story of the first black prima ballerina. I first found out about her by reading her obituary. That's how I first found out who she was. And, I mean, she was such an incredible woman. She was asked to dance by the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo, the Russian ballet, to dance with them, and which was unprecedented at the time. However, they said she'd have to paint her face white.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 15, and she said no. And she went on to work really hard, and she ended up becoming the first black prima ballerina. And hopefully more people will come to know who she is.
Yeah. I was like reading through and reading about these people and like I was just even shocked. I'm like, dang, I wanted to know more. I think I had the same experience as you. Everything was like packed into like one chapter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was the Black History chapter. You did it during Black History Month.
Yes. Right. And then the rest of the year it was like, we've never heard of these people.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things I think that's very frustrating for me. And mind you, you know, our next film I plan on launching it during Black History Month. I have nothing against Black History Month.
Yeah, I see her.
But I think it's also really important to teach children early about all of these incredible contributions to our history and to our country by Black Americans that we don't hear about. If they learn this stuff early, I think that it changes the landscape of race for them. If they can recognize their value or their neighbor's value by seeing this and seeing how we all contributed and are part of the fabric of this country, instead of just hearing, you know, in February in a really short month that there are like, you know, a handful of black people that did something. Because then the message is like, oh, every now and then a special black person comes along and does something great. Yeah. Oh, Barack Obama, yay, special black man. You know what I mean? It's, you know, there are just so many people to learn about, and Black History Month is not, cut it. It's not enough for us.
After the break, we are going to have Karen Parsons tell us a Black History story, Nod style. And be warned, Karen Parsons is about to eat a whole lot of peanut butter.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Samsung, Expedia, and Sephora. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So what we have decided to do today, given that we have such an auspicious guest.
Yes.
Somebody who's so celebrated for so long. Oh, God. We were like, what would be a better sign of respect than to make her eat copious amounts of peanut butter?
Yes.
And try to tell us a story, like really put that professional training to work.
So one story that you're working on is about Bessie Coleman.
Yeah, Bessie Coleman, the first black female aviator.
Yes. So here's what we're going to do. Instead of just asking you to tell us about Bessie Coleman, which I'm sure you would do a great job. We're actually going to play one of our favorite games. It's a tribute to Black history figures who should be known at least as well as George Washington Carver. Peanut butter history.
George Washington Carver was the wizard of the soil.
George Washington Carver was the most well-known African-American of his day.
During his lifetime, Carver extracted more than 300 products from the peanut.
There is one product that many mistakenly attribute to him. Peanut butter.
So, your challenge is to tell us Bessie Coleman's story in 4 minutes or less while you are eating as much peanut butter as physically possible. So.
You're excited about that, right?
I'm thrilled.
Yes. I can see it all over your face.
Oh my God.
Just for those of you who can't see right now, I mean, it's like leaps and bounds.
Yeah. What am I doing? What am I doing here?
Do you eat a lot of peanut butter on the regular?
I'm more of an almond butter kind of girl.
It's like a treat.
I like peanut butter.
You change it up. It's not a party if it happens every day. So to get in the mood, why don't you go ahead and open that jar?
Yeah.
All right. I think you should open it wider because you're going to need to go in there a lot.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Here you go.
All right. So, before we get started,
all right,
let's get one really big scoop of peanut butter on that spoon.
You look so thrilled.
Yeah. You can do this.
It's not a teaspoon, everybody. It's one of the big tablespoon jobs.
Yeah. It's like a ladle, basically.
It is like a ladle.
All right. So you've got your peanut butter on the spoon. Brittany, are you ready with the time?
Mm-hmm. I've got 4 minutes on the clock.
All right. Uh-huh. On your marks.
Yeah.
Get set. Go.
Okay. So Bessie Coleman was born in Atlanta, Texas in 1892. And she was the 10th child of 13 kids.
Wow.
Her mother was African American. Her father was African American and Cherokee. Yuck. So, age 23, Miss Thing went to Chicago to live with her brother, who had been fighting in World War I. And she ended up working as a manicurist. And she ended up hearing all these stories about, oh, God, this is so gross. Heard all these stories about
women aviators and all these daredevil aviators in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I said.
It's a big topic in the nail salon.
So her brother teased her about how, like, oh, you're never going to be able to do that because you're a black woman and blah, blah, blah. He teased her about it. And she was really fascinated by the whole idea, but then that just presented a challenge to her. Oh, my God.
Well, you got it.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
She tried to find a place that would teach her, and she couldn't find any school that would teach her how to fly. And so she had become friends with a lot of community leaders in Chicago, including Robert Abbott,
mm-hmm.
who was the publisher of the Chicago Defender, which was the largest African-American newspaper in the country.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And he suggested...
We're halfway done.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Robert.
He suggested she go to France. And he said, you go there, they're less sexist, they're less racist, and they're the head of aviation right now. And so he said, I will help pay for you. And so he and another businessman sponsored her trip because they really were bent on seeing an African-American woman become a pilot. And she took, her money. Her money that she had saved from her manicurist job, along with the money that from the sponsors, and she went to Europe. And in 7 months, she learned how to fly, and she earned her international pilot's license from the Fédération Aéronautique Internationale.
Oh, man, you said
that's
so
French.
Clear.
That was amazing.
You need more
clear French.
Fédération Aéronautique Internationale. Still sounds good. It was the first African-American woman or woman of Native American descent to receive that. And also, it was 2 years before Amelia Earhart would receive her international pilot's license.
That's amazing. Wow.
How's that?
Yeah.
You got about 1 minute left.
All right. So quickly, I say she came back and she was a big celebrity and she was very ambitious and she liked all the celebrity and everything. So she decided she wanted to do air shows. She was known as Queen Bess and she would perform and she would do parachuting and diving and wing walking. But she leveraged her power and her position to make sure that she only played for, I don't know, only if the crowd was desegregated and if the black people could come in the same place as the white people came in. But unfortunately, on April 30th, 1926, Bessie ended up dying in an accident.
Oh, no.
Ironically, she was not flying.
Oh. Mm.
She was preparing for a parachute jump, and her mechanic and publicity agent was at the wheel.
Yeah.
The engine failed, and Bessie was thrown from the plane. It was 2,000 feet above the ground.
So
horribly tragic, obviously. But her, as we know, her legacy goes on, and we are doing our best. One more bite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To keep Bessie's story alive.
Yes. That is...
Can I do it?
That was
Bessie
beautiful.
Is so proud.
That was beautiful.
I did it for you, Bessie. That. You know, I'm serious. Yuck. When you see Bessie's pictures, she's so cute and she's got this big smile and she's got so much energy. She was only 34 years old, I think, when she died.
Oh my gosh.
And I do anyway. I look at her and you know, I don't abstract her like she's just—it's like a black and white picture of somebody that I can't relate to. Or you look at her like she's this real, passionate young person doing this thing in front of you, and she really does inspire you. You know,
yeah.
And you think about what she was doing. Like I was saying, honestly, if she was around now and you heard about her, she'd be all over Facebook. People would be like,
yeah.
"You know who this girl is? You know who this woman is? Who went to France and did this and that?" Because they wouldn't let her. You know, she was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, seriously, for coming and telling us
thank
about Bessie
you.
Coleman.
Yes. Thank you.
I feel like I've learned so much.
You've been
like,
educated today. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to go home and try to relay this to my kid.
Good.
Well, there's this thing that we do when we get to the end of a peanut butter history segment.
Was this a jelly now? I got to, like, eat a big jar of jelly?
We don't do jelly around these parts.
George
I don't
Washington
know.
Carver didn't do jelly.
Oh, yeah.
No.
So
he didn't
here.
Do jelly. Okay. No. We try not to support gelatin like that, but... We try to keep it vegan friendly around here. But usually what we do is we welcome this person, the person that we've just told the story about, into the peanut butter pantheon, which is where they are lifted up.
Yes.
Up. You know what I'm saying? Into the leagues of a George Washington Carver.
Yes.
So usually we say it together. Would you say it with us?
Okay.
So Bessie Coleman.
Welcome to the Peanut Butter Pantheon.
That was beautiful.
That was good. That was strong.
You did good.
And you look great.
You don't look sick.
You wait, no. Wait, I'm going to walk out of here?
No, when I did it the first time.
You guys are going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, Karen.
You actually got through like.
No, you did get like half a jar.
Half the jar.
Don't make me sick. I started feeling it like hit me like right in here.
Struggle
like,
is a small sacrifice for the culture. Talking to Karen Parsons was like, I mean, I can't even describe how great it was. Like, you know, they always say, like, don't meet your heroes because you're going to be disappointed. Karen Parsons is somebody who, like, actually lived up to and exceeded the hype. She's awesome. She was so cool. She was so fun. She ate half a jar of peanut butter in the name of Black history. So few people would do that. To watch her films, go to sweetblackberry.org. The Bessie Coleman film is coming out soon, so watch that space. And to see pictures from our interview with Karen, be sure to subscribe to our newsletter. Go to gimletmedia.com/newsletter to sign up.
The Nod is produced by me, Eric Eddings, with Brittany Luce, Kate Parkinson Morgan, and Emmanuel Berry, with production assistance from Wallace Mack. Our senior producer is Sarah Abdurrahman. We are edited by Annie Rose Strasser. Engineering from Cedric Wilson. Fact-checking by Nicole Pasuka. Special thanks to MR Daniel. Our theme music is by Khalid B. Additional music in the show by Talkstar.